I'm Colleen McNamara, and you're listening to My Dad on All Marine Radio on the All Warrior Radio Network.
Joining me are three of my extremely close friends from San Clemente, California, Jeff Kenny. Jeff, good morning. How are you?
Good morning. I'm good, Matt.
You sound good.
Thanks.
Yeah. You told me the morning's the best part of your day, right?
It is. I kind of start slipping off around noon or so.
All right. And from McAllen, Texas is Tim Lynch. Tim, good morning. How are you?
Hey, Matt. I'm doing fine. Thanks. Yourself?
I'm all right. And from Analushkakushka, Kansas, is a suburb of Kansas City, is Will Cosentini. Will, how are you?
Mac, I'm great now. I mean, I'm described as one of your closest friends. I went from being friend to not a friend to now I'm a close friend.
Let me tell you, that's
really feel good about it.
Well, don't for too long because that's a variable. Okay, it's not like a fixed value that I assign. So on any given day, your value as a friend can go up or down. So, but congratulations on being a close friend today.
What will tomorrow bring?
That's a good question. That's a good question. You know what? And we've all lived it too. So that's even better. The reality is even better. Amazing times that we live in today. I sent you guys an outline. Obviously, Will didn't get it. So let's go around the room and, some unprecedented shit, right? We have the rioting demonstrations, you know, that going on. We have, an admiral, a former Secretary of Defense, and a former four star, writing letters publicly, taking the president to task. We have a senator writing an op-ed, you know, talking about the federal government needs to respond under the Insurrection Act. We have a Secretary of Defense, I don't know if you'd say vacillating, but seeming vacillating over the last few days. And all of this rolled into a backdrop of what we see on our televisions on a nightly basis. So let's start with Timothy Lynch, O-Doc Lynch. Let's talk about the problem, Tim. Tim, what's the problem?
The problem appears to me to be that we have elected a president that a majority of the establishment find reprehensible, that he is way outside of the line of good conduct and comportment and decency. And despite his rather, I think, more than adequate performance over the last 3 years, has to be removed from office at all costs. And I think this is the final volley.
So that's the problem. All right, Jeff, problem?
Yeah, I pretty much agree with Tim. I think there's people in, for lack of a better term, the establishment, who they just cannot abide President Trump. And they're, half of them are like feel that the former candidate, Hillary Clinton, was cheated somehow out of something that she rightfully deserved. And so that they're continually trying to persuade us that we should get rid of President Trump before his time is up. They don't want to wait for the election, and those of them who realize the futility of that will do anything, including almost, you know, things bordering on treason, to make him seem less, to make him seem ineffective. And the truth is, he's been amazingly effective considering all that. So when the president flies off the handle and says things that are bizarre, especially for people who've been watching the government for years and years like we have, you know, the first instinct is to, you know, say, yeah, there you go. You know, he deserves to go. I mean, how could you say that, president or that Secretary of Defense Mattis was an overrated general? Oh, my God. You know, but the truth is this. It's amazing how restrained he is in light of the stuff that's been thrown at him every day. Every day, you know, bastinado of attacks from all angles for all things, from the look on his face, from the, you know, from the way he walks to the plane, to, you know, being in the bunker or crossing the street to go look at a church that got burned out. It's, you know, the guy's under a constant, he's constantly fighting, and that makes me like him even more. And I feel disappointed in those folks, particularly the ones who are in the defense establishment, like Esper and General Mattis and General Allen and Mullen. I'm not surprised at him, but you know, they just it's just disappointing, and it seems like a pile on that really has the welfare of the nation, you know, not their first priority.
Will, what's the problem? Hello?
I put him to sleep with my boring diatribe.
Will, what's the problem? Sorry about that.
So I think there's a bunch of problems out there. You know, the genesis of this last week is something that we talked about, and that this idea of a narrative that's not fact-based. And then the reaction to it by senior leaders and former senior leaders, it's tough for me to frame other than the way that it's just been expressed. I look at the statements by the secretary, by General Mattis and General Allen, you know, they continue the narrative. And then to bolster their argument, they really use sort of straw man arguments and other things that are, I looked at General Allen's piece in particular, is a very fine, minute parsing of what the fact is out there, and then uses it to bludgeon the reaction. General Mattis's piece has got things that are just patently untrue in it. And so I haven't seen what the Air Force Chief of Staff said, sort of major. And then I think you note later on, you know, some people that have come out with public statements. Drew Brees, for example, gets excoriated in the public square for expressing his opinion, i.e. exercising his First Amendment right. And so there's a bunch of different things going on out there that have all contributed into this firestorm we're facing.
So the problem I got a bunch of, but the root problem is the narrative?
I think that's a big part of it, because that's the Christmas tree that all these other ornaments are hanging onto. People have thrown around this term institutional racism. I looked it up. There's obvious disparities in results based on race. But the idea that there's institutional racism in the United States, I think we beat the hell out of that with 13th, 14th, 15th Amendments, Civil Rights Act, EEOC. There's ample redress and many, many lawyers willing to seek redress for racial-based decisions and institutions. And in the last 60 years of the country, I think we've had Republicans in charge 32 years and Democrats 28 years. So the idea that there's still institutional racism, you would think that if someone from the left says the solution to that is we need to control the government and do these, well, the government's been controlled by the people that you think are going to attack this for almost 50% of the time, and we're still there. I just don't know what your solution is if you say there's institutional racism. So it's this false narrative that drives. And look, these guys are intelligent people. John Allen, I mean, we all know him pretty well. General Mattis. But again, when they go out and write things that have patent untruths in them, and we can cite them later in the program if you want to, and then use a very, you know, straw man type of argument to attack what the administration is doing, that's troubling.
I think the problem is that the confederations of the confederation of organizations around Black Lives Matter have succeeded in controlling the narrative. Their narrative is now the narrative of the nation. And so that along with the media's inability to go after the truth creates a situation, and Will alluded to it, where Drew Brees says, I can't agree with anything that's disrespectful to the flag. And he's absolutely annihilated for that statement, to the point that within 24 hours he turns around and apologizes for it. And so to me, that the fact that that narrative is accepted as truth, and it's facilitated by a media that doesn't pursue the truth, is to me the start of this issue. Because if you believe that's true, then you go out into the street, right? If you believe that's true, then you go out into the street. And if I stood on a street corner today in one of those demonstrations with a camera and started interviewing people and say, can you tell me how many people, you know, give me your best guess, how many people in 2019 were killed, you know, by police officers, unarmed black people by police officers, I wouldn't stand there for longer than 5 minutes before I got my ass beat by a group of people. I'm absolutely, if it lasted 5 minutes. And so that is the environment under which all the rest of this stuff, you know, exists. So in terms of defining the problem, and then Donald Trump knows one way, and that's to fight the way he fights. And in this particular case, right, I think that is not the bedside manner that the nation needs right now. But I will tell you this, the reaction to anything Donald Trump does is overblown and hysterical, and is often unfair to him, right? And I don't care if it's the anti-malaria drug he's taken, I don't care if it's his hair, I don't care if it's his kid, whatever he does, right? There's a measure of, not a measure, there's an incredible amount of hysteria that goes along with that. And so, you know, where does this take us? I want to go to the Secretary of Defense, though. What do you, and Timmy, we'll go back to you and start. What do you make of Esper, right, and his vacillations throughout the course of the week? Is he making this thing better or worse?
Boom, morning podcast. I've already taken the mute off. This is amazing. But going to the Secretary of Defense, that type of vacillation and that public disagreeing with the president's guidance in public is unseemly. It clearly is painting a picture of chaos that may or may not be there. And again, he's making a principled stand over a non-issue. Once he sent the 82nd Airborne back, there you go. But I take exception with the interpretations that he and others have made, saying that this does not rise to the level of invoking this law. Because as has been pointed out in the media and by a few people, we used the 82nd Airborne to integrate Little Rock High School. I thought that was a very appropriate use of federal troops. I thought the Marines going up into L.A. was an appropriate use of troops. It certainly provided some hysterically funny stories afterwards. But Trump is an area of fire weapon. He's an emotional guy. The staff, the secretary's job is to temper that and try to shape that into an agreeable policy, which evidently he did, but he aired all his dirty laundry out in public while doing so, which to me is this form of virtue signaling, and I'm getting very irritated by it.
Okay, hold up. Before Jeff, you talk, Will, this is the second time we've attempted this. I screwed something up last night. Will explained last night about, look, we have staffs of people at the Pentagon in the E-ring that take issues like this and they make sense of them. Will you make that point?
Yeah, sure. So I listened to the Secretary's statement as well. And, you know, your job in the staff is really to help your boss make good decisions and to help them frame the problem. And then once they come up with a solution, to find a way to get that solution in place, as long as it doesn't cross a moral, ethical, legal boundary. And so I think that the president's intent was to stop the violence, which I think is very much in the wheelhouse of any elected executive in the country, in that, yeah, people have the right to protest. They absolutely do. But I also have the right to be free and safe in my person. And one of the reasons we form government is to be able to do that. And so when the secretary gets involved in the discussion about, you know, the 1807 Insurrection Act, and the president says, I'm going to send federal troops, well, I think that the secretary's job is to ensure that gets executed properly. I think there has to be a declaration. There does not require a request from governors or local leaders at all under that act. And so if he's unable to help shape that, then it says something about him as a staff officer. He's an executive position as the leader of the DOD, but he's also a staff officer for the president. And, you know, I was pretty lucky, and the people that I worked for were not emotion-based decision makers, but I saw plenty of it in the Pentagon. And there's a legion of colonels sitting in offices that are all day attempting to help frame the message and then the solution so that it's acceptable. And again, across all the issues that are going on out there, because those senior leaders, they knee jerk stuff as well. And you know what? They're not omniscient. They don't know everything. That's part of your job, is to help them know those things so that you get to the intent. The intent in this case, stop the violence. And like it or not, people out there were failing to stop the violence. They use the excuse of, we don't want to violate these people's rights to protest. But I got to tell you, how about the guy whose business was burned out? How about the family who's stuck in their house and not free to move about? Those rights are being violated, and they have a certain priority once it comes to this type of thing. So.
All right. I want to ask.
Let me take my turn. I'll go to Jeff. But I'd say the secretary, the downfall of his statement, he starts out perfectly expressing sympathy, and then he reinforces a narrative of this institutional racism. There's institutional racism in the DOD. What have you done? Yeah. Don't tell me that it exists, because now you're just admiring the problem. Identify it. And what have you done? And he didn't do either of those.
All right. Before we go to Jeffrey, explain. Here's what I don't understand. So Timmy's examples of, you know, the Brown v. the Board of Education and United States Army into Arkansas, right? That is governors refusing to implement federal laws, and the President of the United States saying, okay, then I'll do it, right? The Los Angeles thing is a governor right, appealing to the President of the United States for additional resources, which the President then supported. What the President, his critics say, threatened was independent federal operations within the state, right? So, so Will, how does this work with the President saying, I'll solve this if the governor of New York or the governor of California doesn't request it?
Yeah, so, you know, my source, unfortunately, is Wikipedia, but it is footnoted. And it basically says that the act empowers the U.S. president to call into service the armed forces and the National Guard when requested, item one, to address an insurrection in any state, which makes it impracticable to enforce the law, to address an insurrection, domestic violence, blah, 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 where the state is unable, fails, or refuses. And so if you have a demonstration that gets violent on day one, okay, strike one. If people tell you they're going to do the same thing on day two and it gets violent, strike two. If it goes to day three, that means that you seem to either be unable or fail.
Or refuse.
When I read this.
Or refuse, right.
Or refuse. I won't say refuse because we don't know. You did fail, though. Those are facts. And so it seems to me, based on this, there's three tests that you don't have to meet all of them. You only need to meet one of them. And so and this thing is being used a bunch of times. There's about 15 on here and ones that are analogous to this occurred under the Johnson administration, 67, 68, 68, 68, Chicago, Baltimore, Washington, D.C., and Detroit.
Riots, right? Does it indicate, I mean, that was all requested by governors though, right? Or no?
Not D.C.
I'll say state requested. Those cases, they were, Kennedy employed it to enforce desegregation.
Right.
What else do we got here? Eisenhower desegregation. And then you got to go way back into the post-Civil War era, U.S. Grant, basically against the Klan. That being said, just because that those things were requested, that's one way to enact it, it seems.
Right.
But the law clearly states that it doesn't require that. And, you know, Tom Cotton, he's got a law degree from Harvard. I don't know if that's worth shit or not, but he seemed to think that it's perfectly legal. When I read this thing in plain English, and maybe I don't understand the language, it seems to be okay. And then General Mattis puts in his piece that it's not the law. Well, your facts are wrong in that. And then you use that to bludgeon the president that he's attempting to subvert the Constitution. It's ridiculous.
Can I add something real quick, Mac?
Well, I don't know, because Jeffrey's been sitting on his fingers, and I'm sure his head's getting ready to fucking explode.
He's asleep.
No. The only thing I was going to say is it's Trump. Why do you think he was really thinking he was going to do that? He tweets this crap out as a negotiating tool. I don't even think that we have to give credence to the fact that he was even thinking he had to do that. He's negotiating. It's what he does. I think that I just wanted to point that out.
Tim, beyond that, though, he has the full authority, as you can read in the law.
Unquestionably.
And if I can find it by one Google click, then I would think the secretary, the former secretary, other four stars could read that as well. They may not like it, but to state it's illegal is ridiculous.
Yeah.
All right. Now, the most patient man in Southern California joins us, Jeff Kenny. Jeff, your thoughts?
Yeah, I think first of all, the narrative that, you know, the president's acting illegally by using federal troops, and that and this thing is about George Lloyd. Both of them are patently ridiculous and easy to see that the fact is there's no institutional racism, particularly in Minneapolis, where the mayor is like he's left of of Trudeau up there in Canada. The governor is a Democrat, and the police chief is black. And there's plenty, and there's a pretty good minority of black officers in that police department. It's ridiculous. And I think, and I know General Mattis and I know General Allen are looking at this thing and looking at the things that are happening, and they know that this is a false narrative, and yet they still propagate it. And at the same time, we got this thing going on with Esper, where he decides to basically be insubordinate to the president here in the last couple of days. And then on top of that, just recently, the Air Force chief of staff and his sergeant major. If one more chief of staff, one of the services comes out like this, we know that there's something in the works. I think there's something in the works anyway.
What do you mean something in the work?
I think something illegal on the other side. Like, for instance, they're looking at a way, they're almost setting up for the trial that's going to happen, because I think they're going to try and remove this guy, and they're going to try and do it because they're looking at the math, and they're not being unrealistic like we sometimes are. They're saying this guy's going to win again, because the more they do this stuff, and I see on TV last night, one of these, Antifa people forced a woman to go down on her knees and admit that she had white privilege and apologize for it. And that was flashed all over, Fox News and stuff like that. What's going on here is an effort to intimidate, and then they're going to try and remove the guy and say, all these institutions are saying this guy's, he's done impeachable things. I don't even know if they'll try and impeach him. They'll just say, we're going to remove him. And this is the beginning of that right now, all at once. The day that Obama deigns to give us another lecture about morality and stuff like that is the day that Mattis and all these other guys decide to chime in with their stuff. It's just too pat. It's just too pat. And I don't put it past them. They're desperate to get rid of this guy. What they really hate is the idea that, the legal majority of the states of America, as defined by the Electoral College, put this guy in. And they're thinking that if they don't do something, it'll happen again. And they can't abide that. And I think that's what this is. If one more pillar of the military, one more of the service chiefs comes out like this, then to me, it's not even a question.
Well, stand by, because you know what's going to happen. I mean, I don't know if it won't be a service chief. In my opinion, it'll be a retired, general or flag officer. Relative to the Esper thing, I see him as a B-team guy. He's supposed to do what Trump tells him to, right? Trump had enough of Mattis and the pushback and the slow roll and all the rest of that shit. I was surprised, because that was on yesterday during the show. When I watched it at yesterday, 10:30, 11 o'clock my time, I was surprised at the end of it that he didn't say, based on that statement, I therefore am submitting my resignation to the President of the United States. I don't know how you stand up and say – he didn't say that what the President was proposing. And I agree with Timmy, now that you mentioned it. I agree with Timmy in that, the President thinks out loud, and it's part of the flamethrower that he uses, right? There's – good and bad application of the flamethrower. And I think this was kind of a bad application of it. But I don't think the question, as Will said, it's not illegal what he tweeted about, right? But I think the Secretary of Defense's point, we haven't reached that point, I think is valid. Now, when he says that, right, to me, right, when you, as a Secretary of Defense, how do you stay on? Right. And then he went back to the White House that night and he countermanded orders, I think it's the 82nd that's in the vicinity of Washington, D.C. to go home. They're still there. And so to me, Esper's this vacillating guy that's trying to figure it out. And so I think he should have resigned at the end of his statement yesterday. And I do think he made a mistake, as you talk about American cities as battle space. Now, again, I think it all gets blown out of proportion because he's affiliated with D. Trump, right? Is that a venial sin or a mortal sin? Well, I think it's a venial sin. I think it's survivable. I think it was a poor choice of words. But in this charged political environment, that gets blown up too. But those are the things that serve as the basis, the perceived weakness of this as a Secretary of Defense, right? And the president's tweet relative to conducting, you know, if it's not requested, an independent federal operation within a state, right, is taken seriously by Admiral Mullen, General Mattis, and General Allen, and that's the intellectual basis of all three of those letters, right? And so let's talk about the letters. You know, I don't care how, you know, Tim, is which letter do you want to talk about and give us your thoughts? And we don't need to address all three of them, but if you want to pick something out from one of the letters that you find breaks squelch for you, or if you want to address all three, feel free, Doc.
All right, I'm going to pick on the Mike Mullen letter because I feel that it is particularly egregious, and I'm going to read a real quick from it. As a white man, I cannot claim perfect understanding of the fear and anger that African Americans feel today. And then he goes on and on about supporting the solemn obligation to support people when they're protesting something. And real quick, I want to illustrate something. Hey, Jeff, when the day that you got found out you were getting promoted to colonel, you had a chance to talk to General Allen, did you not?
Well, not that day, but like a couple of days later. Yeah, it was Christmas time. I found out about it like the second week in December, and then he came at Christmas, you know, to dole out chow. I think General Dunford was there, Neller was there too. It was a lot of generals and their wives. Well, no, not their wives, but the only one who had brought their wife out there was Amos. But that's when I saw him and I talked to him a little bit. And about
you
nothing.
You talked to him for just a little bit, a guy that you've worked for on several occasions and whatnot. Who did you end up spending your time with that day?
Oh, that was God damn it.
Your old battalion commander, right?
Yeah, right. Yeah, General.
General Walt Gaskins.
Yeah, Gaskins.
Right. So, yeah. So here's Jeff. Just found out he got promoted to colonel. General Allen, who we've worked with for on several occasions. All these generals who know Jeff are there, and Jeff spends his whole time sitting there talking to General Walt Gaskins, who is his mentor, was his battalion commander, and whatnot. Out of curiosity, so the audience understands, Jeff. Not that we even give a shit. But is General Walt Gaskins an African American?
Yeah, yeah,
yeah. No shit. And who cares? And that's the environment we were raised in. And you can't, after 20 years of affirmative action, tell me that we live in an intrinsic racist society when our lived experiences would say that's exactly the opposite. I had to put a white kid in as an African-American candidate because he was born in Africa, because I was missioned for a Rotsi kid in the Intermountain West. And I knew all 20 of the kids that qualified, and they were going to Harvard and Stanford and stuff. They're like, no, we're qualified. We're going places, and good for them. And these are kids that earned those spots, but you couldn't find a ROTC scholarship for them because they were already getting better offers. So you can't tell me about this institutional racism that Admiral Mullins has experienced all his life, because that's some serious nonsense. Yeah. And we know it's nonsense. And that's yeah. I just get so irritated at this condescending tone, and it just makes me want to vomit.
Yeah, the institutional racism history of it is the last guy who really was the big hero of that was Woodrow Wilson, who revoked all of Theodore Roosevelt's and other Republican presidents between the end of the Civil War and when he turned over with Taft. Revoked every year, they made it better and better, you know. And you know, Woodrow Wilson put him right back into 1872, and. You know, that was his contribution. That's the last time we had, no kidding, by law, by rule, you know, institutional racism.
Mm. Yeah. Well, man, I was raised mostly in Annapolis, Maryland. When I was playing Pop Warner football, they were segregated football teams. That's how – that was Maryland. That was Annapolis, Maryland in 1971-ish, 2-ish. So we've come a long way in my lifetime. And I resent bitterly these kind of accusations. I resent bitterly the governor of Virginia taking down the Robert E. Lee statue. And because I went to high school the same time he did. In fact, Quantico High School played his high school once and beat the hell out of him, too. But I knew better than to be running around in white, black face and a KKK cape in Northern Virginia in 1976, for Christ's sakes. So this whole thing has got me enraged, because it's predicated on a false narrative, and I think that's exactly what we're watching play out. How does the narrative going to play out now that it's butted up against reality? Because there's a lot of people who are saying exactly what I'm saying, and that is, wait a second. Racism? I don't know of anybody who would actively advocate for that. The white racists are the most marginalized people on earth. I mean, nobody takes them seriously.
Right.
Except for the Tiger King guys, maybe. I don't know.
Yeah.
Jeff, is there something out of one of those three letters that you'd like to throw in front of the masses?
Well, General Mattis's, Will kind of hit on this. General Mattis's letter, he says some things that are just patently untrue. Like he downplays the destruction, of the riots and says these are overwhelmingly peaceful. I think that's his quote, and that's just not true. That's just not true. And I think there's some guy who used to work for General Mattis in 1st Marine Division who's got a motorcycle shop in L.A. and he's got his baseball bat. And these guys are breaking through the window guards on this thing. And he's thinking, he's hearing this on the TV that he's going to have to run away from pretty soon. He's thinking, where is the guy that led me, to Baghdad? Doesn't he know what I'm going through? These people that we put, the American people went through this stupid coronavirus thing where basically local governments and state governments forced them to go bankrupt, forced them to ruin their businesses and in a lot of cases their lives. And the very before that's even over, this baloney comes in where now we want these people to accept the fact that they're all racist and that it's their fault and they need to fix this thing, even though none of them have done anything wrong. All they've done is obey the rules. Every dumb rule that comes down the pike, they obey it. And what do they get for it? They get shit on. And I'll tell you what, I think there's a lot of those people. And if the guy who says you're shitting on days are done, because I'm going to make some changes, he's going to be the one who gets elected.
All right. Will, anything out of those three letters that you think, or are there a few things out of those letters?
I'm going to bring up two things. One is the tweet from the Chief Master Sergeant of the Air Force. He says, I'm a black man who happens to be Chief Master Sergeant of the Air Force. I am George Lloyd. I am Philando Castile. I am Michael Brown. I am Alton Sterling. I am Tamir Rice. Well, that continues the narrative. And also it's patently false.
Right.
Michael Brown, drugs in his system, assaulted a store owner, assaulted a police officer, and got shot.
Right.
If the Chief Master Sergeant of the Air Force, if that's who you are, then you got no business being there. And then he continues, this, my friends, is my greatest fear. Not that I'll be killed by a white police officer, but that I'll wake up to a report that one of our black airmen has died at the hands of a white police officer. If that's your greatest fear as a Chief Master Sergeant of the Air Force, you don't know what your job is.
Yep.
Your job is to support and defend the Constitution and protect this country. So item two on the Allen letter, he lays out three things. He says, number one, the president didn't show enough condolence. Well, that's, I guess, a judgment call, and I actually don't care. I'm interested in what he did. And the first thing he did about George Floyd was tell the Justice Department to prepare to investigate to see if his civil rights were violated. Because if Minneapolis proved incompetent and unable to charge and convict this guy, the federal government was going to step in. That's what Trump did in regards to Floyd. The second thing Alan talks about is, the overwhelming majority of these people protesting are peaceful. Well, that's irrelevant. I did riot control with John Allen. And one of the theories of riot control is that the mass of the people out there are not the people that you're worried about. It's the instigators that are going to violence. And if they get violent, then the crowd gets violent. And so you attack the violent people. So to say that the number of people doing violence is minuscule, again, it's a straw man. And then the third thing, he continues the narrative, is that the president personally sent people to clear Lafayette Park so he could have his photo op. Well, the park police and the attorney general have come out and described exactly the decision-making that went into Lafayette Park. And so, unless you believe the park police are lying to you and the attorney general, then you put three things that tell you that you must speak out. One is irrelevant. He didn't show enough condolence. Two, you know is false. Three, you know is false. And the third thing I'll add about General Allen, you know, we call him General. He's not a general anymore. He is a partisan. I have no problem with people exercising their rights. Vote for who you want. Support whatever candidates you want. When you're a retired four-star and you actively participate in a campaign, you have become a partisan. You don't get to stand above the fray and be a great arbiter anymore. And he should never accept being titled general anymore, because generals are nonpartisan. So those are my arguments. You know, MacArthur had it right. Old soldiers should just fade away.
But he didn't do that. I mean, MacArthur faded away?
Yep. After he made
wanted to be president of the United States.
He didn't get nominated. So
what did he do? He got fired. Congress invited him to speak, and that's the last you heard of him.
Right, that's right.
I don't think that's, if you read it closely, I think that he was a little bit more politically active than that, and then he got the fucking boot, and then he went away.
Exactly. Then, well, he was on active duty.
So he became Doug.
He testified before Congress, and then faded away.
After he wanted to be the president, and they didn't want him.
He did want to be,
right?
But once he got forcibly retired,
then he became Doug. Then, according to Will, he became Doug, and then he went away.
Right,
he faded away. What did you hear about him after he testified before Congress in 1951?
Yeah, well, even the commie William Manchester says that.
You heard about his attempt.
Complaining about Eisenhower.
No.
I don't want to hijack the conversation.
Well, this is an important point
about MacArthur.
Because I read American Caesar too.
Well, it ended right when he retired. He didn't go any further.
Oh, then I read something else.
What did you read? What did he become? Did he become mayor of Oshkosh, Michigan?
Mac, did you read that he went to a think tank in D.C., that he participated in political campaigns on the stage, and then he wrote op-ed pieces that were based on falsehoods? Is that what he did? He didn't do that.
Right.
Now you're going to force – now we're going to get into a debate about Douglas MacArthur.
I don't want to.
Well, we have to. All right?
Yeah, he's describing Smedley Butler.
Yeah. People are smart enough not to vote for either of those two guys.
Hold on. After the war and political involvement. Do you want me to read this or what?
Sure.
I won't. I want to talk about General Mattis's thing. First of all, to me, the parallels between all three of them, you can see. One, they hold Donald Trump in low regard. Whether they would ever say that in public, they don't believe that he's their intellectual equal. They don't believe he should be the president of the United States. And they have politely tolerated him. Okay, I think they all share that in common. Two, they've all bristled at his decisions and his style as the president of the United States. And now I think this week in particular, what clicks all three of them off safe are the tweets that Timmy, I think, appropriately described as the president, you know, trying to put pressure on governors and mayors to do something about this shit. They take literally, which I would say is out of context, all right, based on what I've seen. All right, second, all three of them then look at the Secretary of Defense and they see him as a weak guy, right? Using the word battle space, which all three of them use in their pieces, and, you know, standing in front of St. John's in a photo op, which they believe is inappropriate. Based on that, all three of them put pen to paper and they write what they write. The thing that, and there's elements of there's things that I mean, as we know, they're smart guys, and there's arguments they make that if you believe, right, if you believe that, then there's valid. What I don't like that General Mattis does is he uses the Nazi thing in there, right? That to me is so over the top, it's ridiculous. Right. Yeah. So to me, it's like, okay, if you got a problem with the guy and you want to craft an argument against him, that's okay with me. The whole Nazi thing, like, come on, man, really? We have to go Nazi on this thing? But again, the problem that I have in all three, which goes back to the initial define the problem, is you're expanding on a false narrative. And if we can't count on people, substantive people in this country to say, okay, look, first of all, we have to get to the truth in all of this. What is the truth? And we have to have a discussion about that. Second of all, to quote the chief of staff of the Air Force, we got to create a space that everybody can feel comfortable, from Drew Brees to, you know, Mr. Floyd's brother, that they could stand up in public and they could talk and they're not going to get annihilated when they're done because you don't agree with the popular narrative, right, that isn't related to the truth. But the fact that you don't believe what's being hammered on Twitter, what's being hammered on Facebook, right, the Will, stop texting me, okay? All right, stop texting me. And so to me, then you're complicit in all of this. And so to me, what I see in all three of those letters is their absolute hate for Donald Trump. That they don't, he's not what they believe should be the president of the United States. And they each manifest itself in different ways. They take his tweet literally, right, that he would put down with no authorization, with no request from a governor, that he would actually, they believe that he would actually do that. Now, yeah. I don't see that. I don't believe that would have played out that way. I believe the president would have blown it up and would have said, okay, look, the fact that Governor Umtefratz doesn't want that, right, then you know, we're going to sit here and wait to see if what he says happens. If it doesn't happen, we stand ready to support him. I don't believe, just like, to me, it's like the same thing. You'll read that. So if Donald Trump loses office, loses the next election, what happens if he refuses to go? Like, what? And you read these absurd things. But for the people that hate Donald Trump, they believe that, well, that's real. What happens if he refuses? Well, I think the Secret Service, right, goes in and grabs him by the back of the coat, right, and his pants, and they escort him out of the room. I think that's called peaceful transition. But people legitimately believe this. And so, but again, so I want to ask this. Where does this all go? Where does this all go? To me,
you believe somebody's going to do something isn't it's irrelevant. You know what I mean? You can't punish somebody for a crime they haven't committed yet, you know?
Right. So now what we've had is really unprecedented. We've had riots and looting in this country like we haven't seen since 1993. We've had people that are sworn, that have taken an oath to support and defend the Constitution, and they have all, three of them, very prominent ones, have clicked off safe. I imagine you're going to read more of that. You have a Secretary of Defense who's come out publicly saying that we are not where, right, we need to be in order for the Insurrection Act, which absolutely contradicts the president of the United States, the president that he serves. Where does this all go, Timmy?
Well, it appears to me that there's a lot of things within the narrative, within the establishment that are in play right now. The very first one is COVID-19 has disappeared. It is clear from the numbers of protesters and police who have been massed together for over a week now that where the COVID-19, the threat that Fauci maintains it remains to be that we'd have tens of thousands of people flooding our hospitals in 14 days from COVID-19 infections. And I don't think there's anybody in America that believes that's going to happen. So that thing has died. Every attempt to remove the president from his legitimate place as an office holder has been exposed to be fraudulent, to include when Trump was running as a candidate and says, hey, I think they're spying on my campaign. And all the very same people in D.C. who are attacking him now were attacking him back then, saying that's preposterous. How could he even begin to do that when, in fact, they were spying and would ultimately try to lock up a lieutenant general who was the head of our
okay,
our
hold on. No, the question is, where is this going, Timmy? Where is this
going
to go?
Where it's going to me is we're going to see in November a stark choice. I don't think the narrative can sustain these hits. I don't think the Democrats riding behind Joe Biden are going to be able to repair any damage outside of their base. I think the American public has had it with them, and I think this marks a change in the end of the rule of the experts, the worldwide initiative type stuff, and computer modeling. I mean, climate change, computer modeling. Give me a break. Marine Corps going to change because of computer models? Have you looked at the models? Give me a break. Nobody trusts models anymore, nor should they. And I think that's where it ends. It ends with us normal people, which I can maintain we are, being in a position of advantage because the narrative can't be sustained. If you're going to talk about police justice, you got to talk about the Department of Police studies that say that in Philadelphia that black officers were 67% more likely to shoot unarmed people than white officers. What the hell is that? Hispanics 145% more. These are facts that have to be addressed, and nobody engaged in this conversation wants to talk about those facts because they're less than pleasant. And I think that we've had enough of pretending. What these people maintain is true is not true. Title IX is going to save women's sports from transsexuals. That, disproving that thing. I mean, the assaults we've had to endure are quite frankly getting to be a little bit too much, I think, for the silent majority to take. And I think we lash out in November. I sincerely hope so.
Jeff, where does this all go?
Well, I think it's going to get worse before it gets better. To me, it's another coincidence that the day finally the Senate gets off its ass and starts actually having hearings about what happened vis-a-vis General Flynn and stuff is the day. And right away, there's a conflict between Rosenstein, what he's saying, and what, the assistant director of the FBI was saying. They're calling each other liars, basically, now. Same time as when Obama comes with his big lecture and these two generals pop off, or former generals pop off about, gauche dude that the president is. I think they're going to push it, man. I think we're going to see more violence. We're going to see more killing and stuff like that and anarchy in an effort to muddy the water so much that Obama, the magic Democrat, will not be. That's the thing right now. Those guys are going to be exposed. I mean, his whole crew for what they did in the interim between the election in November of 16 and then the inauguration in January of 17. That there is a crime that dwarfs anything that Nixon or Warren G. Harding's people ever did. And they don't want to face that because it's already coming out.
Will, where does this go?
Yeah, I'll just stay within DOD. The CNO came out with a statement and said, racism is alive and well in our country, and I can't be any under illusions that we don't have it in the Navy. The chief of staff of the Army goes out and basically says there's racism in the Army. And the chief of staff of the Air Force has said, we're not going to get better overnight. This is weeks and months of engagement. Well, you know, I take that personally. The idea that this racism has existed for our entire life and, the enlightened ones are now discovering it is beyond malarkey, to say the least. But what it shows is that they've become captive. And so where does it go? Is the service, you know, time is zero sum. If you're going to add something, you got to take something out. And so now we're going to spend inordinate amount of resources and time, particularly trying to figure out where all the racists are. I don't know. Maybe I walked through the raindrops for 28 years. I just didn't see it. And so when you've got the leadership and look, so what happened? So a cop in Minneapolis, did a bad thing. And now all the services of this country, all the military services are going to gaze at their navel to figure out why they're such bad people. And all these retirees, people of stature are coming out against the president and not being fact based. I wouldn't take any bet to describe where this is going to go. Cause 6 months ago, you couldn't have predicted that we would have locked ourselves in our houses.
Right.
6 months ago, you couldn't have predicted that any of this was going to happen. I have no idea where it's going. And that should give people pause.
I kind of agree with Jeff in terms of this is going to get worse. Because you know, the whole power. So you think about it. I mean, a narrative that is now accepted as truth, right? And then that is affirmed by two pieces of horrible pieces of video. I mean, watching that kid in Florida, right? And that fight in Florida. If the kid's just out for a run and he stops in a construction site and then he gets shot by a guy, it's horrible video to watch. And then, you know, as bad as that one is, right, watching the thing in Minneapolis is fucking worse, right?
Which, yeah, but Matt,
hold on.
Stop for a second.
But those,
video.
Right, I know.
We don't know what happened in Georgia.
I know.
You don't know what happened before.
Will, hold on. What I'm saying is that the power of video, right, in our popular culture, which affirms this, right, what gets to the truth, right? And so in the midst of this, at some point, what are we going to do to sit down and have whatever to get to the truth? And all of this is part of the truth, right? The statistics Timmy talked about are part of the truth. The statistics about the number of black people involved in being charged with murder in this country, right? Four times their number in the population, they're charged with homicides at 400% of their rate in the population. The same thing relative to armed robbery. That's part of this, right? So then you got to talk about the police trepidation of dealing with black men. Where does that come from? Is it right? Is it wrong? Well, it doesn't matter if it's right or wrong if that's their experience. And then the other side of the coin is, you know, the trepidation that black men have with dealing with cops. Where does that come from? It comes from real experiences. Why? So when do we have that conversation? And I don't know, because I don't see us moving towards that conversation. So I agree with Jeff. This is going to get worse as these things continue to get thrown on TV, regardless of the surrounding circumstances, because the dominant narrative in the nation is accepted now as truth.
But we're a distinct minority.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. And so,
just that, though. That's all true, Mac. That's all very true. But then it's also, there's people who have a vested interest in keeping the rancor and the chaos going.
Yeah, but there's more people that don't, though. And that's my point is that, you know, and I can't remember which one you said that, is that the majority of people, and I think it comes from Cotton's op-ed, and that is the majority of these people in this country, you know, want the protesters to go out there and protest peacefully, right? And they know that's their right, but they want them to do it peacefully, and they want law and order established. And the other point that that woman makes, you know, is when you get after the police, right, as they did in Baltimore, who pays the price? It's the people in the inner city where the murder rate went up just like it did in Baltimore, as the police say, yeah, not so much, right? You want to get after us? You don't want us to lean into this shit? Okay, fine. Here you go. You get what you get. So where does this go? Until somebody's willing to confront the truth, all the truth, I don't know where it goes, right? And again, if you don't start from the truth, then I don't know how you begin to make progress on this issue. And so I think it's going to get worse. And I will tell you this, the charges that got levied against those police officers, if there's a reasonable doubt raised, right, and they don't get convicted on those charges, then what? Those riots, based on the truth that everybody believes today, will be worse than the riots that we've seen so far.
And even if they do get convicted, if they gave them all the death penalty, it would still get worse, because this isn't about justice. This is about domination. This is about, you know, there's nothing you can do with the other side to make them think that, okay, he finally sees the right. He sees that he's racist and stuff. I'm going to go ahead and take that as, no, they will never stop. You try and placate these people, it'll just encourage more of the shit we're seeing every night in New York and fucking, you know, in Minneapolis and so forth.
And also, Mac, I don't think we can have that conversation. If there was a conversation to be had, Barack Obama was the man to have it. Because when you start looking into that conversation, you've got to explain some inconsistencies, such as why do Africans, Americans from the Caribbean heritage, why do they do better than whites economically and professionally and educationally? Why do Africans from Africa who are there's a lot of them down here in South Texas, why do they tend to come over to America and excel and do better than whites as far as education, Nigeria, entertainment? You see, there's all kinds of aspects that really I don't want to talk about it, because I don't have any business talking about it. It's not my friggin' problem. It's a problem of the African descendants of slavery community, and they've got to address it. And there are voices in there doing just that with Brexit, et cetera. But they're the guys that have to address this. It's got nothing to do with you or me, my friend. I can't sit there and have some kind of kumbaya meeting, say I understand your pain. I don't even fucking care about your pain. Not you, generally. Yeah, that's all.
All right, final thoughts. Will, are we going to talk about Douglas MacArthur one more time before we get off, or what?
No,
we're not.
Mea culpa. Sorry. Hey, I.
What are you reading these days, Will?
Yeah, before we go there, I mean, this idea that we have to have this conversation. How many times in the last 40 years have you heard this idea that we have to have this conversation?
A lot.
What's the
every goddamn year we hear it?
What is the conversation you want to have? You know, the conversation should be skeptical of experts, be skeptical of the media, be skeptical of video. Try and think for yourself. It's not hard to look some things up and discern, is that a reasonable source or not? But again, when a majority of the service chiefs have bought this, when the majority of the seemingly the people that you talk to in public have bought this, it's not going to get better.
How many of them have bought it? How many of them are just intimidated and saying that?
Oh, that's a good question. That's a good question.
If you're the service chief, service chief and you have authority, and that's what you're doing, then it really doesn't matter if you bought it or not. You're executing it.
You're right. So, they're cowed, though. And, I mean, how long does that last? I mean, the only antidote to that is people have the guts to say, hey, you know what? You want to have an honest talk about race? Okay. Let's talk about how you guys are committing four times the amount of felonies for your proportion of the population.
Well, and
you're murdering each other at the rapid rate. Let's start with that. Oh, you're a racist. Throw him in jail.
I would say the it's interesting that we have all these racial statistics in the U.S.
Right.
So I would think that there's probably two governments in history that maybe had greater racial statistics than we did. Nazi Germany and apartheid South Africa.
Whoa.
And so how do you do that? Well,
you're right.
Probably man. Had greater fidelity in racial statistics than we do. And so if the is race a determining factor? I don't think it is. I think it's a benign factor. There's nothing you can do about it, and it shouldn't. If the idea is you can predict someone's behavior based on race, well, to me, that actually sounds like racism. So I don't think that you can. So are we going to get beyond this or not? And I get it. There's a bunch of disparate outcomes when you slice it based on race. You can slice it based on socioeconomic factors like intact households and all kinds of different ways. And I'm not even going to try and get into that. But if leaders out there say that I'm in charge of this organization and there's racism here, well, if you've been in charge of that organization longer than 6 months and there's racism there, then you own it. What have you done? I don't know what to say about that.
Yeah, the best thing I can say is if I come across any racism, I will stamp it out aggressively, you know, and I will have no mercy on those who dare to behave racist manner.
But that's intrinsic. That's a given.
Yeah, you're right. It's a given. Oath, you shouldn't have to say it.
That's a given.
I'm going to tolerate sexual harassment this week so I can focus on anti-racism. It's just silly.
Well, I think, though, Jeff brings up a good point, though, but – I mean, honestly, if you are in a position and said the things that we talked about, hey, you know, before this discussion goes any further, let me just throw out some statistics. You'd be resigning within 24 hours.
Yeah.
You know? You would not be fired. You cannot say the truth.
And so to me, I don't know where the discussion goes if it doesn't entertain all the elements of the truth. So, all right. Do you want to talk about what books you're reading these days, or what? Will does. He's not reading MacArthur. I can tell you that. Go ahead, Will.
No, I read that, but I discounted a lot of that book because Manchester's a bit of a fabulist.
Here we go. What you're reading?
Good Night Darkness. So I finished that book, Tower of Skulls, about the Pacific, and I really highly recommend it. And it's interesting because he starts the Pacific War in China in the 30s, and there's just a lot to that, and it helps understand where China is today in a lot of reasons. And I picked up a book. It's called A Narrative of a Revolutionary Soldier, by a guy named Joseph Plum Martin. And the reason I read it is, I've been reading some revolutionary history, and it references this guy. And it's an interesting book because it was written by a guy in 1830 who first enlisted when he was 15 in 1775. And he's a private soldier, first in, I believe, a Connecticut unit, and then he enlists in the Continental Army. And just the style that he writes in, the English language that he uses of that time, it's interesting to read it. But it's also, he was there for all the major campaigns. And so just a really a different kind of book that so far has been very good.
Jeff?
I'm reading Valley of Decision I read it a couple times before, years and years ago, but it's about the Quezon area, and it starts out, it talks the history of it. And the first Marine it talks about going there is, I think, General Krulak, the senior Krulak, in the, I think in the late 30s up there hunting tigers. But then it goes through the Vietnam conflict and why it was important. It talks about when Major Al Gray took some radio recon guys and a company from 2-3 up there in 1964 to see if it was worth, garrison in the place or planning the garrison. He's like, there's nothing up here. No reason to. Of course, that changed. And then, but it goes to, it goes through the fights for Quezon in 1967, you know, that 1-3 and 3-3 and 1-9 had, and then goes through the actual siege, you know, the famous one in 68. And then subsequent to that, all the way up to Lam Sam, I think 719 was the name of the operation. It's a Vietnamese operation supported by U.S. fires and air assault, you know, forces. And it ends at the end of the Vietnam War. But it's very good. It's by a guy named John Prados and retired Navy chaplain Ray Stube, who also wrote a book called Inside Force Recon. But it's great. It's comprehensive. And Mac, if you picked it up, you'd find more guys to get a hold of an interview about the subject. So
all right. I will, if you'll send me the data, I will go ahead and do that.
Roger that.
I'm not reading anything. I spend my day doing other things, reading current events.
He listens to rap music.
But I have read a little bit about Douglas MacArthur. MacArthur felt uncomfortable campaigning for the Republican nomination and hoped that at the Republican convention, a deadlock would ensue between Robert Taft and General Eisenhower, which would end with the GOP nominating him as the best compromise. MacArthur's unwillingness to campaign for the presidency seriously hurt his ability to win the nomination. So I hope I stand vindicated on that issue. And Will, I accept your mea culpa. Jeff never even offered one after his bit of ridicule. So I just did read that. But anyway, now let me just tell
Wikipedia
you.
Wikipedia is liar.
a pretty unique week, I think, in American history this week, and pretty unsettling. And I still don't see a positive direction, you know, where the nation heads, something that gets formed to look at the issue, right, to reconcile the nation with it. And if you don't have that, then if you don't have that in a public setting, what you're just going to have is this screaming event. And really, why the president, I think, needs to push that is without that, then the issue is ruled by a mob. A mob that you know is espousing, you know, things that aren't true, and yep. I think that's dangerous to the democracy, and that cannot be the way the United States of America functions in the future. That it just matters who yells the loudest, who is most adept at convincing everybody on social media that this is in fact true, and then we'll enact policy and we'll govern the nation, you know, in light of that. So. All right, boys. Yeah. Well,
how's sir? That going to happen between November?
It's right. Not. It's not. That's what's yeah. So concerning. Not, and then wait till the next piece of video happens. What then? If the mayors will we go down the street where the mayors say, well, we want to give the riot, you know, its space to dissipate, and we have the same game plan for looters and things like that. You know, mm-hmm. and if that's the case, I mean, then we're going to, much like we did, and I said this last night, so I apologize, boys, but much like we all relearned the reason why our grandparents had savings account and bugged us to have savings accounts, we're going to relearn why, you know, you don't let riots get out of control, why you respond to them quickly, and as soon as it gets violent, it's over. You know, we're going to relearn the lesson because you can't have your city fucking burned out. And if California had a $54 billion budget deficit, it's greater today because of lost businesses, lost tax revenue in the future, and the cost of repairing a city. And so I don't know. I'm not very positive. So, all right, I won't take up any more of your time today. Thank you very much.
All right. Bye-bye, Matt.
See you, bud.
Yeah, bye-bye.
There you have it. William Constantini, Jeff Kenny, and Tim Lynch here on a Thursday edition of All Marine Radio. And that'll do it. So stand by. I didn't even play the national anthem today. That's how... Again, at some point, there's got to be a reconciliation. There's got to be people that sit down and talk about these issues, people that get to the truth. And I just don't see, I don't even see a door that's been opened to that yet. So, you know, stand by for more of the same. And no, it's concerning. It's concerning because that's not how the nation's supposed to, you know, take, the United States of America is supposed to take these issues on. And it doesn't seem like anybody wants to, doesn't seem like anybody wants to take them on. So, you know, we will have the churn, whether it be from the media, whether it be from, you know, esteemed military figures. We will have that churn, and stand by because it'll get worse next time. If you're just tuning in hour one, you're going to hear a few things. One, what is the problem? So you're going to hear this narrative of this black genocide that's going on that in our country. And so you're going to hear Tucker Carlson go through the numbers. And so you'll hear that. A total of 10 black Americans who were quote-unquote unarmed, killed by police last year. And I want to say of the 10, six of them were, I want to say used weapons or attacked, used vehicles as weapons or attacked police officers with tasers and other things. And there was no charges. One was deemed an accident. In the three other, the officers were charged in two of the three. So when you actually footnote the total of 10, you know, I mean, the number is below five where officers did not fear for their life. So, yeah. So anyway, you're going to hear that. You'll hear the Secretary of Defense, who, in my opinion, won't survive the weekend. If he does, the only reason he does is because the president knows there's no way he can get anybody to replace him. So he'll just tell Esper he better shut his yap and stand in the corner and not do what he did this week. So you'll hear Secretary of Esper, you know, in a press conference saying that we haven't reached that point that the president says we've reached. And at the end of which, he probably should have resigned. You'll hear a little bit of the chief of staff of the Air Force, you know, talking along with his command master chief, command master chief Wright of the Air Force, who's black. And so, again, institutional racism. And so, you'll hear about that, and then you'll hear an hour of an hour plus of us talking about these subjects and the letters that have been written by general officers. One of my Marines emailed me, "Mac, I do not remember General Mattis or General Allen speaking up during the '93 riots." They did not. They would have been majors at the time, maybe lieutenant colonels. Also, have they not seen all the destruction in the northeast of America, New York City, Philly, D.C.? I think they might have a little merit, but with the stay at home, because we told you to stay at home and you could not go to church and we will arrest you if you break my rules, to now these same governors breaking their own orders with the riots. And yes, the police need reform. Why have they not spoken up in support of General Flynn? Just some thoughts. You know, I think, and that's the reason why you got to have the dialogue. You know, if you ask me my general impression, people are in support of protesters. People are concerned about what they see relative to police violence against, you know, black men. And I don't think people understand it, and I sure as hell don't believe they understand the scope of the problem. But they want to see that change. I mean, that's just the way Americans are. They want to see it get better. They don't want anybody to be mistreated at the hands of the police officer, right? If you're a conservative, you know, I think most people that are conservative are pained by the president's bedside manner, and that he just seems tone deaf. It's the worst thing he does, right? And I think Tim Lynch puts about as good a face on it as anybody does when he says, that it's a negotiating tactic. It's a president thinking out loud. You know, he did the same thing with COVID, saying, I have the power to open up every state. Yeah, I don't really think you do. And even if you did, technically, you know, we don't think you'd do it anyway. So, I mean, he does this, right? In all this, on top of this horrible videotape that we see. So, anyway, have a great Thursday. We'll see what happens the rest of today, and we'll see you tomorrow. So, hang in there. We as a nation, somehow or other, will muddle our way through this. But I think the nation's looking for leaders now. Leaders that believe in the truth. Leaders that aren't afraid to go there. Because that's where the solution is going to come from, is dealing with the truth, not dealing with somebody's narrative. So, on a Thursday, have a great day. Almarine Radio, over and out.